Our second responder is Louis Desserts. Louis is the Quebec Regional Director of Vote Marriage Canada. He is the co-founder and director of Preserve Marriage, Protect Children's Rights, a bilingual organization located in Montreal to promote man-woman marriage based on the rights of a child or children to a father and a mother. Writing a bilingual summary, Louis was instrumental in the dissemination in North America of the French National Assembly report on the family and the rights of children. Earlier this year, he testified at the Massachusetts Judiciary Commission on the Marriage Amendment. That was in April this year. He recently addressed the harm to children, children's rights resulting from same-sex marriage at the What's the Harm? How Legalizing Same-Sex Marriage Will Harm Society, Families, Adults, Children, and Marriage, a symposium jointly sponsored by the Marriage and Family Law Project at Brigham Young Law School and the Marriage Law Project at Catholic University of America's Columbus School of Law. His most recent op-ed appears in the September issue of The Interim and is aptly titled, Marriage. Has Canada Forgotten That Children Have Human Rights? Louis, please come and give us your address. Thank you.
I've listened to the conferences up to today, and I read Elizabeth Marquardt's paper. And I've been aware of a number of these issues, but I was really flabbergasted by how wide-ranging the consequences of this erratic trend in parenting that is occurring. There was discussion this morning about Jean-Jacques Rousseau and Kant about the individualism, and I think from all the presentations we've heard and from what you'll hear from me, individualism seems to be a key feature. And it seems to be framed in such a way that it has no consequences. We know that's not true, but that's how it's happening. And if we need to ask ourselves, you know, why are we here today? Why are we discussing these issues? It's because it's anarchy out there. We're taking fringe situations in society, and through adult advocacy, we're taking these things and making them into laws that apply to the majority. This is unheard of. In all societies, there have been minority groups that did all kinds of things that were more or less along the lines of what the majority thought was normal, was appropriate for the continuation of society, and the societies continued. But in our case, we're generalizing exceptions. This is unheard of. In reading the Elizabeth Marquardt's document, which I greatly appreciated, and it's kind of funny because she asked me, I don't know if you've had time to read it. And I said, well, I should have, and I did, luckily, because there was a lot of good material in there. But one of the things that I found interesting, and this is a trend that I see in a lot of speeches and a lot of papers that are written, we talk about about the children's needs, rarely about their rights. But think through the dynamics of the changes that are going through in our societies. How was same-sex marriage adopted in Canada? It wasn't adopted because gays and lesbians had needs. No, no. It was brought because they challenged the courts on equality guarantees found in the Constitution. How did same-sex marriage get adopted in Massachusetts? Exactly the same way, challenging a constitutional provision and saying, we have a right to that. How many children showed up during all those court battles, not only in Canada, in the various provinces, but in the U.S. and all the states where there are legal challenges going on in other countries? How many children showed up saying, hey, I have a right given by nature to have my mom and my dad? Zero. Why? Very simple. One, they're not born. And two, the ones that are born are not concerned with this particular case. And three, children don't have any ability, any capacity to defend themselves. And let me use an analogy. For any of you who like sports, in Canada, hockey. Imagine a professional NHL sports team on the ice, and they're going to play against a bunch of kindergarten kids. Now, the kids don't even know there's a game going on, so they're sitting out in the stands. Who's scoring? Obviously, the adults. But then, all of a sudden, some people are watching this game. They say, hey, this is not fair. What's going on here? So, a few people decide to stand up as proxies and try to defend the rights of the kindergarten team. And obviously, it takes a while because the professional team has all the advantage. They took the initiative. They were on the ice first. The goal was empty. I mean, they're just scoring like crazy. So if we ask ourselves, why are we here today? Adults have used their initiative, their resources, their ability to defend themselves, to promote their interests, and children were not represented. Is that going to change? Not likely. Because there's not a child in the world who will be able tomorrow morning after I speak to go up and defend his interests in front of any court of law. It'll have to be interpreted by proxies. And I'd like to get here to maybe a policy recommendation. It is the duty of the state to protect all citizens, particularly in this case. Because children cannot do it themselves, the state has a duty, a responsibility, a moral obligation to step in and protect children. One interesting situation that is brought up in Elizabeth's report is the situation of France, about which I know a little bit. It was a bit of a coincidence that I ever fell upon that report. And I made an assessment that it would not likely be read in French by too many people in North America, particularly in the U.S., for all kinds of reasons, which I won't get into. So I decided to read it, all 453 pages of it. And I was asked to write a summary. And I thought to myself, well, I'll write a 10-page summary. And I was told, no, 2 pages. I said, And I don't know, I'm French. My mother tongue is French. I speak French every day with my wife and my kids. And the report is not exactly a novel. It roams, there are chapters and there are all kinds of interesting headings, but when you read it, it's a little hard to find all the relevant points. But after a fair amount of work, I did put together a 2-page summary, in both French and English, by the way. And let me explain what France did, which is unique. I don't know of any other country on this planet that has gone through that type of exercise. Contrary to what's going on in our countries, where a couple or a group of people go to court, file a claim, obtain a judgment, and that becomes case law for the next court, as we saw in Canada. Ontario got legalized same-sex marriage, and pretty soon 7 or 8 provinces did the same. France decided to set up a commission of the National Assembly. It's nothing like in Canada. They had 30 members, and they worked for a whole year on it. They listened to all points of view, and believe me, they heard all points of view, all the ones we hear in the media, and they heard other points of view also. But they were forthcoming, and they listened to it all, and they listened very carefully. And here are some of the conclusions that they came up with. First, they wanted their analysis to have a framework, an organizing principle. That organizing principle was a convention on the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child, 1989, which France has ratified, and so has Canada and about 200 countries in the world. In that convention, there are two articles. They refer to a few more, but there are two that are really the underpinning of their whole analysis. Article 7, which Elizabeth referred to, and I'll take just the portion that relates to marriage, a child has a right to know and be raised by his parents. Well, the only way you can know your parents are the two that brought you to this earth, your biological parents. And the other is Article 3, that in all decisions, I'm paraphrasing here, by courts and legislatures, the best interests of the child should be paramount. By the way, one of their recommendations was to enshrine that in law in France to provide guidance to judges, which has sorely been lacking in all these same-sex marriage cases that we've seen. The experts talk about the needs, but nobody talks about the right of a child to have a father and a mother. Some of the conclusions that they've come to, very interesting. First of all, the obvious one, no to same-sex marriage. Why? Because it creates fatherless or motherless children. They even, as part of French law, by the way, surrogacy is contrary to public order. It is the same situation in Quebec, but surrogacy is allowed in the rest of the country. Surrogacy is prohibited, and this is not a new decision on the part of France. It's something that's been a factor for 10 or 15 years. It is contrary to human dignity. And there are a couple of other points related to that, and they refuse to allow surrogacy. Civil unions, they have PACs, Pacte de Solidarité. These are equivalent of civil unions in North America and other countries, with one big difference. Civil unions are not allowed to have access to medical reproductive technologies like IVF, and surrogacy, because, same principle, you don't want to create fatherless or motherless children. So it's not just a marriage issue. If you take the perspective of the child, it talks about same-sex marriage, it talks about civil unions, it talks about cohabitation, it even talks about singles. Singles are not allowed to access medical reproductive technologies. The only ones that are allowed are the ones who are married, and those are just male-female, and common law couples who can prove that they have at least a two-year relationship. So they're putting some, they're actually building a fort, and they're saying, well, we're not going to let various things interfere with the right of a child to have a father and a mother. So these are some of the things that we'll do. They have some interesting conclusions on adoption also. They don't allow adoptions for reasons that are strictly related to the adoptee. For example, most adoptees are children that have had a lot of difficulty. They've been thrown from one home to another until suitable parents have been found, and they said they don't need a different kind of household that may remain unsettling, irregardless of the quality of the potential parents. And also, they say, to place a child who was born from a father and a mother into a home where he's going to have two fathers or two mothers just creates additional stress, because that's not the model from which that child was born. Now, those are the two reasons, the major reasons that are related to the child themselves. And then there's a third reason, which is extremely interesting. They say we cannot allow adoption because if we do, singles and same-sex couples are going to go and have children in other countries. They'll come back to France and they'll adopt those children. And that'll defeat the protections that we're putting in place to protect the rights of children to have a father and a mother. They discussed at length the issue of the right to a child. They come to the conclusion that it is not a right to a child. It is the right of the child that should come first. They, in their introduction, they mention the fact that in the society we live in, there are lots of divorce, but there are increasing numbers of parents who divorce their children. They do not want to create situations that will multiply that occurrence. We're talking about, you know, multiple parent situations. By the way, I have not a trick question, but it is a trick question. In a couple, you have one relationship. How many relationships do you have in three people? Two? One and a half? Three. A with B, A with C, B with C. So you increase the number of parents by 50%, you multiply the potential for conflict through relationships by 300%. talk about stacking the odds against a stable family. In France, they refer often to the precautionary principle. They said there are lots of things we don't know. Let's be cautious about this. And they also say, let's be careful not to implement in France the most facilitative laws that can be found in other countries. And I must tell you, when I read the report, it was the best education I got on not only marriage, but all of these related issues as they relate to children. And again, from a policy perspective, I would suggest that Canada needs to go through an exercise where we don't look at one issue in isolation, like same-sex marriage and the rights of adults to marry, but rather in the whole context of what impacts do these things have from a legal, from an ethical, from a moral, from a rights point of view, so that, you know, as that exercise is done and as the public is engaged on these issues, that we can have a back and forth and achieve some kind of consensus. Because we all know that the way laws have been adopted in the recent past on the marriage issue have not met consensus. The process has not exactly been the smoothest process, I'll be charitable here. I would like to read to you 14 propositions. Just give me a second. Propositions about man-woman biological marriage. And I would suggest that any changes we make, we test according to these 14 propositions. And I'm going to start by basically listing these propositions in terms of most of them are benefits of man-woman biological marriage. One, heterosexual marriage provides that a child will know and be raised by his own parents. Two, research demonstrates conclusively that heterosexual marriage serves children's best interests. We heard about that this morning. Three, heterosexual marriage provides the child with a natural network of care and support from his immediate and extended biological family. The whole kinship argument. We tend to favor those that are related to us and be somewhat less interested in those that we consider strangers from a biological point of view. Four, heterosexual marriage sets the foundation for the child to have the same biological, legal, and caregiving parents. One of the issues that was brought up in your report, which I thought was very interesting, was the option to decide that I'm a parent or not a parent. In Quebec, two lesbians married want to have a child. They really have three ways to do it, all through insemination. And I'm not considering adoption here or, you know, family reconfiguration. They can go to anonymous sperm donor, in which case the child will never know who the sperm donor is. Two, they can invite the services of a friend. Now, that friend can provide services in two different ways. He can provide it through IVF technology, in which case his paternity is not recognized and he cannot claim to have it recognized. Or three, they can go through the process through sexual intercourse. And now, the Quebec Civil Code says, in that case, the father, quote unquote, can claim his paternity at his option within 1 year. Yes, really. The notion of parent is intimately tied in with responsibility. By opening up families to more than two parents, we're creating a situation where we're cutting off the responsibility from the right. It's difficult to imagine how that can have beneficial effects for children. 5. Heterosexual marriage greatly reduces the risk that children or their constituent parts will become commodities deprived of human dignity. Buying and selling of babies. It's happening on the adoption circuit, and it's happening on the IVF and medical reproduction area. We've had plenty of examples of that. And there's one other dimension that few people realize. This whole talk about same-sex marriage and recognizing same-sex marriage has brought an absolutely incredible result in the U.S. 5 years ago, there was a survey done among gays and lesbians, how many of them wanted children in the next couple of years. 5% of gays, and I think 18% of lesbians. They did the same survey this year. The numbers shot up. One-third of gays want children, and two-thirds of lesbians want children. Now, you remember when I spoke on the microphone, I said supply and demand? It's going to create a huge demand, an increase in demand, and the supply is not necessarily going to keep up. And you're getting into a situation where babies and their components are going to be traded actively, whether legally or not, unless there's some serious consideration given by lawmakers to prevent that from happening. And I don't want to say that the desire to have a child is not a legitimate one, but there has to be in our society some consideration, not just for these children, but for other children. I'll continue. 6. Heterosexual marriage provides children with a multi-generational sense of identity. Just think of genealogy. Second most popular pastime on the internet, and I'll pass on what the first one is. 7. Children born from heterosexual parents have access to their own genetic heritage for medical purposes. As we learned, when the fertility clinic moves, the records disappear. And even having access to the doctor, you're not guaranteed that you're going to get the truth about your parents and so on. 8. Constitutionally defining marriage between one man and one woman strengthens the judicial protection accorded to children. 8. Allowing court-ordered same-sex marriage to prevail creates precedent for further erosion of children's rights. The examples given about the birth certificates are exactly along those lines. 10. Heterosexual marriage protects the filiative rights of all children. Change the definition of parent to legal parent. You start messing around with who's a parent, the government gets involved, and the natural biological links with children are basically weakened by that, with unknown and potentially dangerous consequences. 11. Defining heterosexual marriage is an absolutely essential first step in protecting children's rights and best interest. Why? Because marriage is where it starts, in most cases. 12. Defining heterosexual marriage is insufficient to ensure adequate protection for children's rights and best interests. In the U.S. and in Canada, we had until recently, motions in Parliament to define marriage as being between one man and one woman. It did not prevent any of the other discussions we've had earlier today that violate the rights of children. 13. Heterosexual marriage provides a simple and understandable set of norms. Now, imagine two children, both born from these lesbian women in Quebec. One of them knows his father and has contact with him, and the other one doesn't. And they're trying to figure out why it is that they have the same two-mom situation, but they can't figure out why one of them has a dad and the other one doesn't. If you think children might be confused, lawyers in family law are getting confused about this. There's a survey done in Europe about the different types of family structures and consequences and whether they look like marriages or not, I think in 8 or 10 countries. And the lawyers in many of those countries were confused about the laws in their own countries. Imagine children. And if we try to teach children a set of norms that will equip them for success later on in life, confusion never breeds success. In no business does confusion succeed. And 14, heterosexual marriage naturally protects children from potential discrimination because of the sex of their parents. Now, I am not saying that discrimination is justified. What I am saying is that there will always be a core of people in societies who have religious beliefs, and religion is not about to bow down to society and say, we think same-sex marriage is theologically okay if they've been teaching the opposite for 2,000 years or more. I think, sort of in summary, we have a lot of work on our hands. I would suggest that the voice of children needs to be heard. The media is not particularly helpful. When I Googled on the French National Assembly report in English, I only found one reference, and you'll laugh at this. CBS Online. And yes, they did reference the title, but their story was all about one appendix, one graph in the report that showed that French are marrying at a lesser rate than in the past. No discussion about anything else. It was absolutely amazing. We have to look for opportunities to talk about these things. We have to realize that if we don't, the children can't. And somebody once said that, you know, we know what kind of society we live in by the protection we afford to our children. I think it's our responsibility to act up. Thank you.
Louis, on behalf of us, as a token of your time and your expertise, please accept this as just members of your day here. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much.